Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining us as he does each Wednesday is our science communicator, Dr. Carl. Good morning. How are you?
Dr. Howard, how lovely to hear from you again.
Well, yes, indeed. Well, I don't know, not everybody says that, but can you tell us what they have discovered, what has been discovered about around the Tongan volcano?
Well, the first thing they discovered was that the surf was crap, that's a technical term, around the world for a couple of weeks after the volcano, because the air pressure wave was so huge. Sure, it took 18 hours to get from Tonga all the way over to the opposite part of the globe, to Algeria in the top left-hand corner of Africa, and then another 18 hours to come back. And it even affected the space, the International Space Station, 400 kilometres up. But it put ripples into the water across the world, and we had never seen this before. So that when you're in the water for about a week after, it felt as though you're in a washing machine with water coming at you from all directions. And then the second thing we discovered, has come out just last week after we sent a whole bunch of scanning vessels across, was that the original 100-metre caldera or crater has been evacuated to nearly a kilometre and 2 kilometres across. And the volcano erupted a total of about 10 cubic kilometres of crud. And you're thinking, oh, my God, that's a lot, because when we had something big like this before in 1991, when Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines exploded, it put out half as much stuff, 5 cubic kilometres, and that then cooled the whole world down by a quarter of a degree due to air pollution for about a year or so. In this case, we put out twice as much crud, but all of it, practically all of it, was underwater. And what happened was we had what are called pyroclastic flow, where you have a mixture of lava that's been vaporized almost into a gas plus air flowing at a speed underwater of 100 kilometers an hour for a distance of 80 kilometers, and it wiped out all the undersea communication cables coming into Tonga. So Tonga was left isolated, and so we've discovered this huge amount of excavation which we had no idea had happened.
Absolutely fascinating. So are there a lot of takeaway points for when this type of thing happens that we could use for our benefit and scientific benefit later on?
The first one is to plan and have some resilience, even if you're in the middle of a tectonic plate like Australia is. So volcanoes will come, and as we get wealthier, we should build the houses more to be able to withstand them. Basically, it's just that we need a better monitoring system. And we also need a society where everybody's a bit wealthier and can live in better houses, which I've got no problems with at all.
I wanted to hear, also understand a little bit more about the invisible universe around us.
Yeah, it turns out that most of our universe is invisible. And I was reading an article in the Scientific American, October last year, pages 56 to 62, called A New Force of Nature, and it was written like poetry. And the author has written a few articles, Marcella Curran, and she said that she was on a high-speed train going across Europe, and she just got very brief glimpses of what she was going past, and she suddenly realized this is the sort of stuff that scientists do, where they get very brief glimpses of the outside world and try to make sense of it. And so she wrote this wonderful article, Marcella, M-A-R-C-E-L-A, Carina, C-A-R-E-N-A. She writes like a poet and a scientist at the same time. She then went on to talk about invisible pieces of the universe around us. Like, we have the invisible energy field around us, the Higgs field, which gives particles their mass. We've got dark matter, which is the stuff that holds the Milky Way together, and it makes up 85% of all the matter in the universe. We have no idea what it is. And then finally, this is the one that hurts my head. Okay, so Howard, now get ready to have your head hurt. You ready for it?
I'm ready. I was born ready.
Okay. Okay, so right. So it goes like this. I've got something to tell you about coffee, if you like. So it goes like this.
Good. Yeah.
The uncertainty principle is very basic in physics, in quantum mechanics. And what it says is that you can measure either the position of a particle or its speed, but not both. Not because the measuring machines are crappy, but because there's a fuzziness built into the universe at the very small scale. Now, think about a particle that can exist, right? But at the moment, it doesn't exist. You've got a metal box, and it's a pure vacuum. There is nothing in that metal box. Now, think about the uncertainty principle. If you're going for a very, 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 very short period of time, well, there's uncertainty in the existence of a particle. And if the time is short enough, that particle can actually wink into existence. And it does.
Wow.
So the first thing is, that hurts your head. We're Absolutely. Getting a particle that comes from something, or comes from nothing into something. Secondly, it's actually useful. If it was not for this happening, your phone wouldn't work. So on one hand, we've got this thing that sounds just totally in no way related to the real world, where you can have a particle springing into existence from nothing due to the large uncertainty in the energy of that particle. But on the other hand, on your phone, you can look at videos of cats because a particle can come out of nothing.
Absolutely.
There you are.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, I'm hurting your head.
Right. Absolutely incredible. But just tell us about coffee. You mentioned coffee, and you know you had me at coffee.
Okay, so coffee time. Mm. Okay, so the thing with coffee is this, right? So the trouble is that baristas cannot make coffee exactly the same each time, no matter how hard they try.
Yes, that
so
is true.
You think that what you should do is you make coffee and you grind it very fine, and you want the very hot water to flow from the top to the bottom of the coffee basket, diffusing through nice and evenly, kissing gently the hot steam against all of the grains of coffee, resulting in a democratic and fair removal of the coffee goodness from all of the grains. But no, this does not happen. If the coffee beans are too fine, then the hot pressurized water coagulates randomly, some of the coffee powder, into an almost solid lump. And so you've got a lump here and a lump there, and the very fine liquid pushes between the big lumps, and so it takes a path of least resistance. So now you're getting a lot of coffee stuff taken from a small amount of coffee, and the amount of coffee in the clumps, it doesn't get any goodness extracted out of it. So you end up with a sort of a bad tasting coffee. So, and this is random, and the cure they just found out, which is that you stop grinding so fine, you use less coffee, and you run the water through for a shorter time, and then you will have perfect coffee.
That is so interesting. Because it is fascinating. You go to a coffee place, and they can really serve the best coffee one day, and the next day it's almost undrinkable.
Well, this is, you can find this story. Look up ABC, Dr. Carl, and coffee, and you'll find this in a story, and it'll give you all the references to how to make a perfect coffee. Maybe print it off and hand it to your favorite barista.
Yeah, I think
without insulting them, without being mean to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. What is it about coffee, though? I mean, you know, we've been obsessed with this drink for years and years. There's definitely something magical about it. It can't just be science.
Well, if you do the studies, you look at the studies, they all show that coffee increases your life expectancy, improves your outcome if you have liver disease, cancer of the prostate gland, what else? Heart disease and cancers of the skin and mouth. But these are all based on observational studies, which I'll explain, which is something like the American Nurses Study, where you look at 250,000 nurses for 25 years, and if they're wealthier, they live longer. If they have coffee, they live longer. If they do exercise and eat well, they live longer. But one doesn't necessarily cause the other, because we haven't done a randomized, double-blind, double crossover controlled study. But based on the observational studies, they all show that a few cups of coffee a day are good for you, so long as you don't have a bit of atrial fibrillation, which happens in our family. And so some members of our family just have a weaker coffee every now and then, rather than a full strength one.
And do you judge them?
No. We go with the flow, because we are all humans and we love each other.
Oh, gosh, Dr. Carl, that is brilliant and probably what I needed to but didn't want to hear. It is 7:28. Dr. Carl, thank you as always.